This is a reading of the book Resurrection Is Now by Dom Elred Watkin, who was a wise and respected headmaster of Downside from 1962 to 1975. This book is a rare opportunity to benefit from his understanding. It covers death in all its aspects, both as an end and as a beginning, and it looks at life from the perspective of a preparation for death. It combines intellectual rigour with a poetic delight in the wonder of being in all its aspects. You can read the whole of this book in the Universalis app through its Daily Books feature, and you will find a link to the instructions in the episode notes. Resurrection Is Now by Dom Elred Watkin. Foreword. These short pages have long been pondered, and they represent thoughts on death and resurrection that have been set down largely at the request of two friends. In no sense are they intended to be a professional theological treatise. The most that is hoped for is that they may be of some help to some people. Nothing has been consciously derived from other and better books on the subject, for what is taken from even the best sources can easily become notional and derivative. The Bible and the Fathers of the Church alone have been drawn upon in the course of ordinary spiritual reading, but all the defects to be found here are to be attributed to no one other than myself. I should perhaps add that I have not hesitated to repeat similar passages in these pages when they seem to me to be significant in a fresh context. I have the authority of the Scriptures for so doing. I am very conscious that to write on death is to compose one's own epitaph, and I would ask any reader of these pages to pray for me in the words of the ancient appeal for mercy. Miserere miserator, quia vere sum peccator. Downside School, Feast of St. Edward the Confessor, 1973. Resurrection Is Now by Dom Elred Watkin. Prologue. All, even the most superficial, have at times felt that there is something other, something further, something beyond ordinary experience, have had the feeling that the whole of what we are or would be is not realized in the situation in which we find ourselves, have come to the conviction that more and better exist beyond what we have experienced hitherto. Just as children in the murmur of a shell held up to the ear listen to the swell and surge of the sea, so we, from time to time, seem to catch echoes and intimations of a life, a vigour and a meaning which exist beyond familiar sights and sounds. Even in ecstatic happiness we sense that there is something more, something not yet attained. In sorrow we are aware poignantly of so much that apparently has been held from us. It is, perhaps, when we are alone in silence, or with those few people we can be with in silence, and hear the sound of the wind in the grass and trees, or the wash of the waves on the shingle, or we view the great spaces of the sky, blue in daytime and starlit at night, that we experience most intensely a feeling that may only be described as a happy sadness. It is both happy and sad because it speaks of some joy that belongs to us and yet is not ours. It comes from infinite distances to us and is never possessed by us. It is always there, otherwise, though closer to us than ourselves. It belongs to a world which exists beyond rational thought, that cannot be captured by our minds, that cannot be held by any power that is in us. It is sad because it yearns for what is not at present attainable. It is happy because in the depths of our hearts we know that we belong to it, and that one day it will reach us and never let us go. It is sad because its world is not our present one, a world of the perpetual succession of one moment to another, a world where cause has so laboriously to be carried into effect, a world where there is never now. It is happy because it tells of a fulfilment which is to be, of a moment when past, present and future are all one, when everywhere is here. It speaks, too, of peace, of a stillness where there is no longer any movement to and fro, of quiet shores beyond changeful seas. And yet the stillness is not that of stagnation. It is more like the stillness of a spring in the hillside, welling up amid the rocks and the ferns, endlessly moving, yet forever still. This is the stillness when seeking has become finding, when anxiety has been quelled by the simple word yes. It is, of course, the promise of the thing rather than the thing itself, but it is a real promise, and somewhere, somehow, deep down beyond thought and experience, the promise and the thing are one. We say to ourselves, not here, not now, but these movements which seem at first sight to be away from us into that which we do not now possess are at the same time movements in and to us of a possession which takes us over, at the moment partially, in the end completely. We feel that our hearts beat with the universe. It is this sense of something other that must lead us on to the thought of the barrier that has to be crossed before this mortal life has put on immortality. Death may be a beginning, but we feel that it is also an end, and this we feel in a thousand ways. A loved voice has forever been silenced. Vivid experiences leave behind them but wraiths in the form of imperfectly evoked memories, and hopeful strivings and ecstatic fulfilments are so quickly lost. We seem to be elsewhere before we are here, to be otherwise before we are thus, forever to be losing today to yesterday. Death is in us, about us and around us. We live in a world of dead leaves, of the flotsam of long-ebbed tides, of fading footprints upon roads where we may no longer pass, and of echoes dying on a wind that scatters ashes. Any consideration of death, therefore, must involve a consideration of these two great cross-currents of human experience. On the one hand, that all is passing, and we with it. On the other, that we are part of a dynamic and creative force which is independent of and triumphs over destruction and decay. These cross-currents appear to be so opposed, so much in conflict with each other, that hope and despair, creation and destruction, seem irreconcilable forces which impel us in this way or in that, in frustrating alternation. We cannot relinquish our hold upon creative hope, for however much we may proclaim our cynical realism, we are unable totally to abandon it. Yet, at the same time, we cannot but be piercingly aware of death and decay, however much we proclaim our confidence in the value of our plans for ourselves or for the human race. A facile optimism cannot do more than temporarily conceal the one from us, while abandonment to despair can never fully destroy the possibility of the other. In the midst of life, then, we are in death. If there is one certain event in human life, death is it. We know that we shall die. We may attempt to forget it. We may even deliberately ignore it. We may revolt violently against it, but death is inescapable. As we have said, death is the great sign of contradiction. It signifies inevitable, daunting and certain destruction, or ultimate triumph and lasting glory. That life is no mere existential phenomenon, episode no mere empty transience, love no mere passing affinity. That there exists beyond and through all the changes and vicissitudes of living an eternal life beating at the heart of things, and that death is but the rending of the veil that hides immortality from human eyes, such is the certainty of Christian faith, the assurance of Christian hope, and the very substance of Christian love. That love is stronger than death, that hope transcends separation, and that faith is the key to fact are of the very essence and meaning of Christianity. The gift of God to man is the present and permanent possession of that for which he yearns. As St. Paul tells us, faith is the substance of those things for which we hope. Let us then face boldly and courageously the certain fact of death. Let us see what is the worst that death can do to us and to others, and then let us see that, for the Christian, death is not an end but a beginning. Let us examine how and in what way we can prepare ourselves to pass through that gateway into the unknown. Let us see that the resurrection for which we long is already as much a part of our lives as the death which leads to it. Resurrection is Now by Dom L. Redwatkin. Death as the End. We should not attempt to hide from ourselves the fact of death, a death that means not only that we ourselves shall die, but that others will die, that experience dies in us, that love can die, and that the very world itself is dying. We cannot consider the matter realistically unless we think about death in some of its many forms. The death of experience. It is a fact that we can capture nothing wholly, we can retain nothing completely. The most vivid, the most ecstatic, the deepest of human experiences are in one sense realities but of an hour. We looked forward to them, we attained them, and now in large measure we have lost them. Recollection may conjure up their memory, but though this preserves something from the past, the happiness gained in the memory of what has been is so often tinged with the pain that it is now no more. One of the first experiences we have, even as a small child, is the fact that custom deadens what novelty once so thrilled. We were, it may be, promised a toy train for Christmas. We looked forward with impatient longing for the day itself. Christmas arrived, we opened our parcel with excited fingers, we set up the train on the nursery floor and watched with ecstasy the engine negotiate the points. In the days that followed, we glowed every time we thought about the new train. And then, after a period, the thrill ceased, the excitement passed. We were still glad to possess the train, still played with it, still preserved it jealously from the destructive hands of younger members of the family, but the old excitement went for ever. It is hard to say why. The train was the same, we were the same, and yet a vivid experience had passed, never to return. This experience as a child has been followed by so many in adult life. We know only too well the familiar cycle of expectation, fulfilment, and at the best a happy memory, at the worst disenchantment. Indeed, the very present moment itself, that knife edge of reality between the past, where we may no longer be, and the future, where we are not yet, is so ineluctable, so brief, so inapprehensible, that its stay with us is too short to be measured by the clock. If brevity can so quickly kill our experience, time is only one among many of its enemies. Were we not always moving on to fresh experiences and engaged in new endeavours, life would at times become almost insupportable. But this movement is in its own way as baffling as the attainment we cannot fully grasp. We are at times intensely aware that human achievement will never completely satisfy us, that we are striving to grasp that which is always slipping through our fingers. It is this sense of the intolerable fugacity of life, of the agonizing transience of the endlessly passing, which makes many try to forget the unhappy reality of it in artificial excitements, in the temporary anodynes of drink and drugs, in a frenzied search for novelty, and in promiscuous sexual experience ever seeking to recreate a passing rapture. It is the frustration resulting from this awareness of the death of experience which accounts for so many psychological illnesses and breakdowns. Such mental disorders frequently derive from a struggle between a human mind, which is of its nature directed towards reality, and a human will that cannot accept a reality so baffling and so apparently destructive of all hope. And even if the struggle be a less severe one, if the anodyne of passing pleasure or an incapacity for self-analysis renders the awareness of it more dim, it leaves, nevertheless, scars upon the human personality. Mature wisdom is so often a mere cynicism which mocks what it thinks it cannot attain, and it tends to clothe itself with bitterness. Such wisdom prides itself on the possession of a sense of realism. It considers that it has come to terms with life. It believes that it has few regrets and makes few demands. It has reached, it thinks, a point of peaceful equilibrium. And in one sense this may be true. To accept the fact that experience dies is a real growth in wisdom. But to postulate that this is the total truth, and to deny the possibility of a real enduringness underlying passing phenomena, is so to misunderstand reality that almost no error could be greater. What the young dimly apprehend, the old sometimes have forgotten. Yet we must face up to what we have called the death of experience, for it is one of the most agonizing of human frustrations. It is an agony because it outrages the deepest demands of our nature. In the depths of ourselves we will not, for we cannot, accept a situation where experience forever fades, where the fleeting present contains so much less than we would have, and when we are so much less than we would be. To assert that the ultimate truth is that reality is parceled out to us in fugitive moments, that ecstasy is but a passing peak and not a perennial possession, that now is not for ever, outrages the deepest yearnings of the human heart. It is the salvation of God alone, as the Apostle tells us, that can deliver us from the body of this death. It is this salvation alone which gives that abiding experience which can wrest the transience from the passing moment, that can seize and retain ecstasy as it flies, can gather up for us, all at once and for ever, the broken and disintegrated fragments of human experience and refashion them into a whole and a lasting possession. The death of love. Of all forms of death, this one is perhaps the most difficult to understand. Though part of the experience of many, it is almost impossible to describe. We are not only talking of those moments of loss when others who have given us unmistakably their love, or have solemnly promised it, withdraw it from us. We are also considering those situations when we ourselves find that another person, whom we believe we have loved deeply, is now of no significance to us. This can be as painful as it is often unexpected. A voice, a face, which were at one time so full of meaning to us, lose it totally. It is this tremendous change from the most intense awareness of another person to that of a flat feeling of meaninglessness which is so mysterious. At one time it would not have seemed possible, now it seems inevitable. What was once living has become to us a corpse. Many of the factors which can cause the death of love are obvious enough. Self-centeredness, egotism, sexual or emotional exploitation, lack of confidence and a trust in another's love, with the demands for reassurance that can never reassure, a refusal to commit oneself save on one's own terms, all these are frequent causes of such an experience. They need not be considered here, nor need we consider those almost inexplicable changes in ourselves or others, more painful because less predictable, by which love dies, Love has many deathbeds, and its mortal illnesses are various and sometimes hard to diagnose. It is the fact itself that love can die which concerns us here. Later we can look at those fulfilling loves which are pledges of immortality. Now we are dwelling on the death of love, that mysterious mortality which has killed what was once so intense, so vividly felt, so full of life and meaning. At one time it was considered that such a love could not die, and now, lamented or unlamented, it is entombed before us. It is the contrast between the then and the now, between past possession and present loss, which must make us at times wonder whether the Old Testament writer, in telling us that love is stronger than death, is not speaking of what he would have things to be rather than of what they are. Yet we know in the heart of our being that he was speaking the truth, that there are loves which can lie deeper than the mutability of human feeling, that can achieve a substantial union between persons that time cannot mar, human folly stultify, nor death destroy. We know that the salvation of God can bring the broken pieces together, can heal the wounds that sin and indifference inflict, can make love everlasting.